Well, Floodline is the title of Catherine Hayman's fifth novel. It takes us to a city devastated by a major natural disaster, a flood, of course. The city's an imaginary place. It's called Hornville, and it's in crisis, and the authorities are really struggling to help. And there are lots of people trapped in a large hospital. So they're in this hospital. The emergency generators have failed. They're running out of water. The lifts aren't working. There's no way to move vulnerable patients. And these people are stuck in this hospital for 5 days, making terrible decisions about who will survive. And if that sounds unlikely, well, this is exactly what happened in New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Here's Australian writer Catherine Hayman talking fiction and ethics with Kate Evans.
So, Catherine, let's start with place. What and where is the city of Hornville?
The city of Hornville is a city that isn't a capital city. It's a regional city. It's large enough to have a number of people who rely on it. It's large enough to have what I think of as a city life force, but it's not Sydney. And I guess in terms of the geographical location, I would say, where do you think it is? Because that's where it is.
Okay, because I presumed that we knew that it was a city in America.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I have had people absolutely read it as America, and my publisher, for instance, absolutely reads it as Australia. When I made a decision about using a fictional place, because I wanted to reflect on how we think about environmental disaster, how we think about climate, the sort of escalation of natural disaster, I wanted to allow the reader's imagination to engage thoroughly. And I felt that having a fictional location thoroughly realised and thoroughly imagined would allow the reader to more deeply engage, to feel, well, what if this was my city?
Now, isn't that interesting? Because it's almost thrown my next set of questions, because I'm thinking this is a city in crisis, it's a city in flood, why not just call it New Orleans?
Because it's not New Orleans. It is a city in crisis, you're right. It is a city in flood. I didn't want to be directly commenting on New Orleans. There were some events that came out of the end of Hurricane Katrina that feature in the novel. So I wanted to make use of some events that happened around Katrina, but of course I was also drawing on the Queensland floods. And I was drawing on this feeling of an escalation in Australia and internationally in, as I said, environmental disasters.
So if we go back then to this city of Hornville, there's a hospital in the city. What's happening at that hospital?
When the novel opens, the floods have just hit. In the hospital, which is at the centre of the city, it's in lockdown. It's in emergency lockdown. There's been flooding for 3 days. And over the course of the novel, the resources of the hospital gradually break down, power goes, the generator is in the wrong place, and so that's destroyed. And so the ability to actually carry out the job of the medics, to carry out the role of medical provision and care becomes destroyed. The workers in the hospital go into emergency mode, or that what they are doing is maintaining absolutely basic services, and by the end of the novel they are unable even to do that, and as a result of the destruction of resources, and the lack of certainty about evacuation, they have to make extreme ethical decisions.
So your novel's taking us on two intersecting trajectories. One is happening inside the hospital and the other is going towards the hospital. So if we start inside the hospital with the character of Gina, who is she?
Gina is a nurse in the hospital. She's been in that role for a long time. Her life outside of this disaster, outside of this event, lacks meaning, really. She is devoid of hope. She's had many disappointments in her life and as a result has come to expect nothing or to expect disappointments. So she's a person who is stuck, but she's also a really good nurse. Because she doesn't invest feeling into her role, or doesn't believe that she does, actually. She believes that she is incapable of caring.
Yes, because other people keep telling us as readers and keep telling her that she is a person without emotions and without care. But in the novel, we're seeing inside her, so we're getting a sense of a much more complex and, in fact, warmer character. So is this partly a commentary on professionalism?
Because the Brisbane floods were going on at the time that I was writing the novel, and I have a sister who was a nurse in Brisbane and very immersed in the emergency procedures that were going on, I think it did force me to really think about what is that role and where is the intersection between professionalism and professional caring and the feeling of care. I think also more deeply I wanted to reflect on the mistaken idea that to care for someone, to be a caring person, to be a good person, if you like, involves feeling. And actually, I'm very much of the opinion that it involves action.
And the practical action Gina and her colleagues have to take involves managing a hospital marooned by the flood. The power has gone and they're running out of water. The staff haven't slept. They're hot, exhausted and afraid. They need help. Meanwhile, another woman, Mikey, is heading toward this blighted place.
As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown, good Lord, show me the way.
Mikey is the hostess of a Christian shopping channel called Shop for Jesus. She's part of a large, charismatic church organisation. And she's someone who has also had loss and grief in her life. So when the floods happened, there's a chance, there's an opportunity for a group of people from that organisation to go to the city of Hornville on a rescue mission, on a mercy mission. And for reasons of her own, personal reasons, Mikey leaps at the opportunity. But actually, she's also going to lay her past to rest.
And it seems it's a very naive expectation about what she can do and the impact she can have. And so at first, she seemed almost a caricature to me. But then as the novel progressed, complexity was in part added by her children, Mustard and Talent. What did they think they're doing on this move towards the city?
They've got two different things going on, if you like. They are, as you say, they're her children, so they're forced to go along on the journey with her. Mustard, the youngest child, wants to believe that he will find his father in Hornville, who was effectively last seen in Hornville, in this city. And Talent, the older son, he has absolutely swallowed the language of this church. He's swallowed the story in the early stages of the novel. So he's right there with Mikey in terms of, you know, we are missioning, as they say, to this festival. It's interesting you say that she was a caricature early on. One of the challenges in writing about people from that world is that, as with any club, there is a lot of jargon. There's a very thick layer of surface before you get to the core. So one of my challenges was to allow those people to speak as they actually do speak and to find ways of giving them their shadows and complexity.
It's almost as if biblical stories of the flood are meeting other biblical stories about the city of the plain, because Hornville is a site for what's like a big gay and lesbian Mardi Gras. And that's part of how the church that Mikey's part of are finding it so problematic. So were you interested in the symbols of the flood?
Of course. As a writer writing about a flood, it would be foolish to not make use of those incredibly rich symbols and those incredibly rich creation and disaster stories across religious traditions. And that is territory that I'm pretty familiar with and, you know, and that I re-engaged with. Again, that idea that it makes more sense to believe that the gaze caused environmental destruction, that that's easier to believe than the idea that humans, by their use of resources, have impacted on environmental disaster.
Oh, sinners, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sinners, let's go down, down in the river to pray.
Well, there are so many things that you grapple with in this novel, and for me, one of the central things are it's the ethical questions that rise in the hospital. So, I mean, we're not talking a little flood. I mean, it's a huge flood. The people in the hospital are completely marooned. And I gather this is based, partly at least, on Sherry Fink's long-form narrative called The Deadly Choices at Memorial, about what happened during Hurricane Katrina at a hospital. Can you tell us about that book and how you came to that, those issues?
Actually, the book's only just come out. So I read her report, her original report, which came out a few years back, and I'd already begun working on this novel. So it began with when I read the report and then went back and, you know, read the court transcripts that came out of the case. So in Memorial Hospital, it was very extreme. The case in question was really about a kind of hospital within a hospital on the top floor of Memorial. And that was kind of run almost as an independent care unit with people who weren't terminal. It wasn't a hospice, but they were certainly at the kind of upper category of illness. Many of them were on respirators, but not all. Most of them were non-mobile. When all the power had gone. So that meant there's no light, there's no lifts, it's stinking hot, so that you've got bodily fluids everywhere. You have hospital staff who have not slept for days and who are having to evacuate an entire hospital. So they're having to carry people up and down huge flights of stairs, you know, just constantly on stretchers. So The level of exhaustion, is very hard to comprehend, I think.
So one of the questions seemed to be, where do you make an ethical decision? Is it to try to rescue somebody in great pain and discomfort or leave them there to die? Or do you have to make a decision about what's essentially a form of euthanasia? What I thought you did very well in the book was bring out almost the impossibility of those moral questions, that it's not actually a straightforward decision at all.
That's always what is going to be interesting to me as a writer, is that question of how. How do you make that choice? How do you behave in the time of crisis? Because how we behave when everything's easy is not really a true reflection somehow of who we are.
Can I ask you another question, though, about the role of the novel and the novelist? And that is the relationship to the people and the lives at Memorial Hospital and what it means to be using as some sort of imaginative basis the reports and the inquiries into what happened there. What then are the ethical dilemmas of the novelist in drawing on real life?
Yeah, it's not the first time that I've used history or life in one way or another. And of course, it's very common for novelists to use or to reflect on life and drawing from real stories. But I felt so conscious, actually, as I wrote those threads, I felt so conscious of wanting to honour those stories.
So did you feel you were bearing witness in some way?
I did feel that I was bearing witness. And one of the reasons, in an earlier draft of the story, there was a sort of moment that kind of thread was there, but it was very small. And as I got to the end of the the novel, I thought, this, I actually need to speak this story more. I need to inhabit this more. It is, you know, it is imagined. It is a work of fiction, and I needed to allow those completely imagined characters to come into the situation to make it a different story. But that said, there are moments that I absolutely have been quite faithful to what happened at Memorial, and that is because I wanted to give voice to it. I wanted to honour it and to honour the people who didn't survive in particular.
Sherry Fink is a physician and journalist whose reportage on the death of patients at the Real Hospital in New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina won her a Pulitzer Prize. Novelist Catherine Hayman read those reports for her novel Floodline. Fink's long-form journalism has since been published as a book, 5 Days at Memorial, Life and Death in a Storm-Ravaged Hospital. Another terrible storm occurred, though, in our part of the world a few days before this interview with Australian novelist Catherine Hayman. What are the limits to it? I mean, as we're speaking now this week, there's a huge natural disaster happening in the Philippines, and it is full of thousands upon thousands of both tragedies and dramas. At what point would a novelist start in there?
Is that a creative question or an ethical question?
Aren't they both?
Yeah. I mean, you know, on one hand, when there is something so enormous and so epic, I think there is that question of the immediate concerns in that environment are survival. You know, that's why those sort of high action films, there's not a lot of internal stuff going on because it's just I'm running. And in a heightened emergency, that's what's going on, isn't it? Your immediate priority is to survive. So I guess in terms of the ethical question, for me as a writer, if I would have to and do ask myself quite deeply what it is that I'm wanting to bring to that story, what I'm wanting to extract, what I'm wanting to reflect on, and what I'm wanting to sort of question and explore. And for me, it does really come back to this question of how do you survive trauma? How do you choose what sort of person it makes you afterwards? Those questions are questions that actually, when I look at my body of work, that seems to be what I keep coming back to.
On RN, Catherine Hayman speaking with Kate Evans, and Catherine's book is called Floodline. It's published by Allen and Unwin.